You're listening to Solar Insiders, the fortnightly podcast that shines the light on the world's biggest energy source. Solar Insiders is presented by Giles Parkinson, the editor of Renew Economy, and Sophie Voroth, the editor of One Step Off the Grid. Solar Insiders is brought to you by Pylon, helping solar installers and retailers design high-resolution solar proposals in minutes. And Nextracker, delivering the most advanced solar tracking technology and the highest performing solar assets in the country.
Hello and welcome to this latest episode of the Solar Insiders podcast. My name is Giles Parkinson. I'm the editor of Renew Economy and the EV Focus the Driven. And joining me as usual in this podcast is the editor of One Step Off the Grid and deputy editor of Renew Economy, Sophie Voroth. Sophie, I trust you are well.
I am very well, thank you. And how are you?
Look, just wonderful. Just about to enter the 3 days of rain that you guys have enjoyed down in Melbourne. So, all very excited about that. But I used my solar energy to do about 16 loads of washing after a visit from all the kids and the family over the weekend and to charge the cars. So the rooftop solar is proving very useful.
Very good. You're ready for the rainy season.
Look, I think I might be. Question about rooftop solar is, where should these panels be made? I've got one of the few that are not made in China, but they're actually made in South Korea, LG. Might as well give them a plug because they're not even made here anymore. But the big question is, Australia depends. What's the figure, Sophie, on how much we depend on the Chinese solar panels? Is it 80% or is it even more than that?
No, it's more than that. I think it's actually in the 90s, I feel like 96% is something that I've seen, but that could be that could be wrong. But yes, it's a huge amount.
Yeah, it is. Well, look, and the question is, should we just rely on Chinese solar panels to supply our solar needs, which is going to be huge as we sort of transition to a zero emissions grid, or should we try and make them ourselves? Now, all the king's horses and all the king's men, all the politicians and senior energy executives took themselves out to the site of the shuttered Liddell coal generator to announce last week $1 billion in the Australian Solar Sunshot. And this is this idea that to pick up on some of the innovative technologies being developed in Australia to make our own solar panels and create our own solar manufacturing industry, promptly shouted down by the usual naysayers as you know, ridiculous, absurd, a flight of fancy, because mm-hmm. We can't match China on solar panels. But the cost price, the price is not really the reason why we would be doing this, is it, Sophie? And I guess this leads into the interview that you've just done with Darren Miller from the Australian Renewable Energy Agency.
Yes, so there's a whole big solar supply chain. It's not just the modules and it's not just, that end part that we put on our roofs. It's a whole lot that goes into it. So I guess, and it is expensive. It will be starting from scratch here in Australia, but I think the point is there's a huge road ahead of us and we've got to start somewhere. So this is what I talked to the CEO of Arena about, Darren Miller.
Well, let's have a listen. This is Darren Miller from the CEO of Arena.
Darren Miller, welcome to Solar Insiders.
Thanks, Sophie. Lovely to join you today.
Now, we've got you here to talk all things Australian solar manufacturing after last week's huge announcement from the Albanese government that they are setting aside up to $1 billion to support the establishment of a solar supply chain in Australia, which has been wonderful news for the industry and for a lot of the people working hard behind the scenes to sort of get this all worked up. I just thought I would start by asking you, the Arena has a huge role in this. It'll be playing a big part in sort of working out where to put all this money. So if perhaps you can talk us through what Arena's role is and how it sort of will start off.
Yeah, no problem. So it is a very exciting announcement and a very exciting opportunity for Australia. We've had solar manufacturing in the past. It went away for a while, and Tindo being our current only module manufacturer in Australia at quite a small scale. So I think, it's acknowledged that this is a bit of a missing piece in the puzzle for Australia. We're very strong in R&D with some of the strongest programs in the world coming out of UNSW and ANU in particular. Mm-hmm. We love to claim that we invented the solar cell. I guess that is a reference to the fact that the PERC technology is in a vast majority of current modules being manufactured around the world, and that was invented by Martin Green and Andrew Blakers and co. from the University of New South Wales, back stemming from the 80s.
Yeah.
And then we sort of skip a whole stage, you know, one, two, miss a few, and suddenly we're a very big market for installation of solar. So rooftop solar being, on 3.7 million roofs in Australia and the number one market globally on a per capita basis, and huge ambitions in Australia to be installing, you know, vast amounts of solar on our lands over time to be a renewable energy superpower. And I think that that's all great and necessary and right, but what's missing in that is really this idea of where are we going to get the modules from? And we're very reliant on concentrated supply chains in China, for example, today. The rest of the world is responding to that with the US Inflation Reduction Act providing incentives for solar manufacturing in the US, and Europe is doing similar things. And I think it's really Australia waking up to that challenge and saying, can we afford to be reliant on other countries to such an extent as we are today for what is ultimately going to be just an incredibly important fundamental technology for the energy transition and underpinning our superpower ambitions? And the industry, as you note, has been advocating for this. ARENA has been advising. The government has been looking at this. And it all came together last week with what should be a very impactful amount of funding to really kickstart that investigation and the first few projects, if you like, in the manufacturing space in solar in Australia.
Yep. I think that it says in the release that consultation is starting this month, so now, and there'll be a paper coming out for feedback. So how quickly can we start to get things going, or is this going to be more about setting out where exactly we want to target this money and what we are going to do? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about making panels, but it's not just all about making panels, is it?
No, it's not. It's not just about making panels, although it's possible that making modules, making panels is the first and easiest thing to do. It's kind of, it doesn't solve the supply chain challenge that the program ultimately aims to solve, because you're still importing the vast majority of everything that then goes into making a module. We don't have cell manufacturing in Australia today. We don't manufacture solar glass. Maybe the aluminium framing can come from Australian aluminium producers, but in the beginning it's going to essentially be, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but it's going to be an assembly job of assembling those advanced manufactured components that are made elsewhere into modules for sale in Australia. And in a way, you know, you could look at that and go, why would we do that when we're still wholly reliant on the, say, Chinese supply chain? But I think it misses the broader point that you have to start somewhere, and there are players in Australia who would like to manufacture modules and think that they can make a go of it. And so, you know, what ARENA will do, and it's what we do best, is taking those ambitions from the industry and figuring out what that pathway looks like to commerciality and structuring programs and funding that gives those opportunities the best chance of success. And so, you know, it's probably no secret that the likes of Tindo, who do manufacture at a small scale, would be interested and have said so, that they're interested in modules. The likes of SunDrive, who have highlighted front and centre by the Prime Minister at the AGL facility in Liddell last week when the announcement was made, they would like to make their advanced cells into modules in Australia. And so there might be some early opportunities for Australian companies to set up a module manufacturing capability. But I would view that as just the very beginning of the process. And what we will look to do is use whatever is remaining in that $1 billion that is not used for, say, making modules. We would look at it for the whole of the rest of the supply chain, whether that's you know, if somebody wants to make solar glass for a module manufacturer in Australia, that might be a great value add. If others want to do the aluminium, or if they want to look at it's clear from the announcement that there's an opportunity for advanced ways of deploying solar. So even taking a module and looking at how you deploy that in the field at greater scale and reduce cost, that's an opportunity that could come into this program.
Yep.
And then I think the really exciting parts of the supply chain that are going to take a bit longer and that are a bit more expensive and perhaps more risky are the things like polysilicon refining, the ingot and wafer manufacturing process, and the cell manufacturing process. There's various steps in the supply chain that where Australia might have a much bigger role to play. And as you go further up the supply chain towards the mining side and the refining of polysilicon, it just requires vast amounts of energy at a very low cost to mm-hmm. make that work. And it might be that Australia, with our sunshine, wind and land and our desire to get into the critical mineral space, could really play a much bigger role in polysilicon refining. And that's an opportunity we would like to investigate along with the industry as part of this program.
Yeah, because we have seen some parallels made and you know, I think in the Australian yesterday, Tony Wood from the Grattan Institute said that he sort of compared the solar manufacturing, or he described it as a bloodbath, claimed some company scalps. And in Germany, we have seen Meyerberger say that they are leaving the European market. They're closing their European factory. So we've seen people sort of say, well, if Europe can't make it work, how can Australia? But how do you counter this argument that it's just sort of like, you know, an economic moonshot to do this?
So, look, I'd say we are fully aware that the solar manufacturing industry is very challenging. The economics are very challenging. China dominates the space with very low cost, very high quality product. And so I don't think anybody is going into this naively thinking it's going to be easy and profitable from day one to do this. And certainly we'll be asking the industry that question as they come to us with their proposals. We'll want to understand from them what their point of difference is, how they will compete in this market, you know, how they think about the value that their brand might bring for sales in Australia. You know, obviously there is an ambition to be an exporter of these things in the future, but I think the first step is what's the market look like in Australia. We're a 5 gigawatt a year market, and Tindo is the only manufacturer, and they have a 150 megawatt facility. So I think we will be asking those questions as well. We're not blind to the fact that it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
On the other hand, and the thing I think we need to bear in mind is we're at the beginning of this transition. Yes, 40% of our electricity comes from renewable sources. Yes, we're a great rooftop solar market, and we're building 5 gigawatts a year of solar on our roofs and in our fields. The renewable energy superpower ambition calls for much, much more than that. We need to be installing 10 times that every year from the 2030s for the next 20 years beyond that to reach what, you know, was a reasonable superpower ambition. So we've got this vision of a terawatt of solar being installed in Australia to 2050. That's 2 billion solar panels, give or take, if you assume 500-watt modules. And I think in the last 10 years, Australia's installed 60 million panels, and the forecasts for the next period to 2030 are for another 60 million. So the superpower ambition is just way in excess of everything we've done today. Mm-hmm. And I think we can't just assume the future is going to be like the past and not have a perspective on where we need to be looking for advancements. So I think that's the one thing I'd say. The other part is also just the supply chain risk element, that if we have no ability to have a stake or a play in the supply chain, then if things get disrupted by future pandemics or geopolitical mm-hmm. situations, or even just the supply demand swings that occur as other countries will seek to install solar at higher rates as well, Australia shouldn't be, in our view, just left at the tail end of all of that. We need to be able to play a meaningful role in the supply chains. And that doesn't mean we need to be able to do everything ourselves, but it does mean we should find out if there are sweet spots where Australia can thrive and others rely on us, so that when things get difficult, we have a stake at the table. Now, I'm not sure that that's module manufacturing, but it might be things like polysilicon refining, where if we do mm-hmm. that at scale, we've got an important role right at the beginning of the supply chain. And it might be in the innovation that we continue to pursue through the universities and the higher efficiency modules that everybody's aiming for, where if we've built testing grounds for those modules so that they don't run overseas immediately and build their manufacturing capability overseas, yep. Australia can retain higher value and a higher stake at the table, if you like, for that supply chain risk that I've spoken about.
Yeah. And this hasn't come from nowhere. Obviously, we've got the huge silicon to solar study that ARENA backed and that was led by the Australian PV Institute, which, you know, came out with some pretty solid, you know, it was a very comprehensive report. It came out with some pretty solid plans to move forward. So, you know, it as you say, it's really about a whole view of a whole supply chain rather than just throwing money at one technology in particular. And I know that what Muriel Watt said to me at the time that report came out, who is one of our solar leaders in Australia and has just got herself an Order of Australia medal in January, just that, you know, it actually will require quite a lot of to work with China, you know, collaboration with other countries, including China. And she said that, you know, the fact that we've had this amazing relationship with China, building up innovation and sharing with them, that, you know, we should be able to use our diplomatic ties to have them help us set something up here in Australia as well. Do you think that's a reasonable view?
Yeah, I think that's right. I subscribe to that as well. I think that it's terrific that our relationships, our economic and trading relationships with China are improving. And even the other day I was reading an article in The Australian setting out how Chinese companies are really looking for investment opportunities in Australia. And I think that's a really great thing, that it's not about us versus them. It's actually about collaborating and trying to play a more meaningful role in Australia in this very important supply chain. So I think it's a little bit about not having our best researchers leave Australia to find opportunities elsewhere, as happened, I think, even back, you know, 10, 15 years ago when the manufacturing opportunities weren't available in Australia. And so our best researchers left to go to China to set up their companies there. In some ways, that was a missed opportunity. Australia could have played a more meaningful role back then. But as I said earlier, I don't think that the time has fully passed, that the world is still scaling up for the vast solar manufacturing and deployment opportunity that is ahead of us. And so I sort of don't think that it's I certainly don't have a defeatist attitude that Australia can't perform or compete or have a role to play. And as to your point about the interaction with the Chinese system, we've got a lot to learn from them now. We can't, there's certain parts of that supply chain that we probably could not do in Australia without the involvement of Chinese partners. So when you look at that silicon to solar report, which you referred to, which I think has been a really seminal piece of work, when you read the ingot and wafer part of the supply chain, which is a really crucial step, I think something like 98% of world ingots, silicon, crystalline silicon ingots, are manufactured in China. And that is just a huge concentration risk, even for China to have to be the supplier to the world of those important ingots. I think if we were to do that in Australia, and it's certainly something we'll look at in this program, then we're going to need to leverage the learnings from the Chinese, who've spent the better part of a decade perfecting this technology. Absolutely. I think we'll have to be open to Chinese investment in Australia. We'll have to be open both ways to sharing knowledge and what we learn. And I think Australia has a really kind of interesting role to play as a bridge between the West and the East, if you like, that we've got this growing, improving relationship with China. We've also got a strong relationship with the US and Western trading partners. And perhaps there's a role for Australia to be like an honest broker, a lily pad, if you like, for these two worlds to meet and collaborate better.
Absolutely. I think this this idea, this approach that we're all in this together, and in particular in the fight against climate change, is going to be really important. But finally, I just wanted to talk to you another one of the sort of roadblocks we've got here in Australia that, you know, obviously is going to be very different from China is permitting and approval for huge factories and for the kind of, you know, scale of factory we might need to make to mass produce modules. How will there be any of that being addressed by this money and by ARENA, or is that just a separate problem altogether for sort of governments and regulators?
I think that I'm not sure that it's going to be a big problem on the module manufacturing opportunity, because I think you can already see from AGL's announcement last week that they've already set aside some land at Liddell for a facility for SunDrive. They've got an MOU together. So it would seem to me that, you know, the small footprint of a relatively small footprint of a module manufacturing facility and the sort of the advanced manufacturing nature of that, rather than sort of heavy chemical and high temperature processes, is probably going to be easier in Australia than you suggest, or that's implied by your question. I think as we sort of look further up the supply chain into the, especially when you get to polysilicon, I think it's going to be pretty confronting for Australia to look at that because it's extremely high temperature, very toxic chemicals used, and we have very high ESG ambitions and requirements in Australia, and it's going to be challenging to just replicate what we see in China in Australia. So we'll have a higher bar for what that looks like in terms of its ESG credentials. And ultimately, that may mean more cost and maybe even more challenging. So I don't have an answer to that other than that we're aware that it's going to get harder as you go up the supply chain on that particular issue of permitting and environmental approvals and all of that stuff. But we certainly want to investigate that. And we won't be building a polysilicon facility with the funding that's been provided, but we may be exploring the space in a feasibility and engineering sense. Ahead of further advice to government and about what can be done.
Could that become a value add? Like you say that it's, you know, we won't be doing it. I mean, it's going to be confronting and it's, we need to sort of find ways to make it more sustainably and obviously it's different from the way things go in China. But so could this become a value add to panel makers if they're using ingredients in the supply chain that are perhaps more ethically sourced, that use more renewable energies in the processing, all that kind of thing? Do you think that we could get to a position where with like say we'll be with green hydrogen, where you have to have this stamp of authenticity? Do you think that kind of thing will become valuable in the solar supply chain?
Yeah, Sophie, it's a great question. And I'm not sure, well, I certainly don't know the answer to that yet, other than to make the observation that I think when we look at buying our solar panels, whether that's households like you and me or, you know, big industrial players looking at solar farms, I don't think we're that focused on the emissions intensity, if you like, of those solar panels, obviously we are concerned about ESG concerns, but again, it's probably not front of mind when we're doing this, because I'd say psychologically we think we're doing the right thing by installing solar, and we know that by doing that we're offsetting emissions for the next 20 years of the life of those panels. But it's a really open and very good question as to whether over time customers, whether that's individuals or whether it's businesses or governments, the demand side will look at those supply chains and require that those solar modules, inverters, you know, car batteries, all of those kinds of things that are solving emissions problems downstream, if you like, once they're installed. But will they gain greater scrutiny upstream as to how they're made, both in terms of emissions profile as well as ESG concerns? And how that plays out will obviously have an impact on Australia's competitiveness, because I think what I'm seeing in Australia is that the manufacturers are looking at green ways of manufacturing and with high ESG credentials. And so to the extent the world moves towards that direction, well, that could advantage or swing things back into Australia's favour when we're looking at our role.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that we do have these, you know, we've got a lot of land, we've got a lot of sun and a lot of wind, this puts us in a good position to use that for our manufacturing. And I think as Muriel said, solar panels and the components needed to make them is a very, very good place to start in rebooting Australia's manufacturing muscle.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, obviously the thing that we have to solve from an industrial perspective is that some of these processes that need 24/7 high temperature processes, and we've got to find a way to do that with renewable energy, which is challenging because we know that sun and wind work very well, but only when they work, and then it becomes more expensive to do that. So certainly we've got ambitions to be a manufacturing powerhouse and a refiner of critical minerals, polysilicon or other things, but we've got our work cut out for us still to find new ways of making those things with renewable electricity in a cost-effective way relative to other economies. But it's an exciting opportunity. That's where the future lies, I think, for Australia's industrial ambitions.
Absolutely. Now, this $1 billion, it sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money to most of us. But, you know, in a sense, it's really just a down payment, isn't it? I mean, do you expect there's going to need to be more of these kind of sums put into this, to the Solar Sunshot program? Do you think, you know, how much do you think private capital will come into the equation? I mean, aside from, as you say, there's no shortage of interest here in Australia already, but do you see this opening up a sort of flood of public private capital?
Look, time will tell what the interest is from the private market to join into this program and to take this on. I think the $1 billion is a good and very large amount of money to get started in this industry from essentially a standing start. So I think we can do a lot of good with this funding. We can certainly get some manufacturing facilities built with the money, and we'll have a fair amount left over to really explore the remainder of the supply chain and make some early investments. And that's the job that ARENA will take on over the next, through the consultation, which has started, you know, which will start very soon, and then into the delivery phase, which will happen throughout this year. And then I think then it's an open question as to what Australia's ambitions are, what that early work looks like, what the advice to government might be, and then really it's over to government to decide how much further it wants to go. But it's really exciting to have this funding available. The industry is very encouraged. We are very excited to get going, and we think we can do a lot with what we've been provided.
Fantastic. I'll just close with this. The Prime Minister said on Thursday last week that he felt that this announcement of this funding was one of the most significant that would be made during his government's term. For you, you've been at the helm at ARENA for a while now, and you will continue there through this huge program. How does ARENA see this? Is this? Do you feel like this is going to be one of the biggest things for the agency?
It ought to be. I mean, we're very excited at ARENA to be doing this. We have for 3 years or so now had our ultra-low-cost solar ambition as part of our core strategic priorities, which has been to drive down the cost of modules and drive up the efficiency of modules, drive down the cost of installation. And we're now adding some legs to that strategy around supply chain security and also around the scale of the deployment that's going to be needed through the 2030s. So we're thinking of 50 gigawatts a year as the right target throughout the 2030s and 40s. So for us, the Solar Sunshot program really completes our strategic ambitions in terms of what we can work on and what funding we've got available. We've obviously got some other very significant programs with Hydrogen Head Start, which is a $2 billion program, mm-hmm. the $400 million we've got for industrial transformation in Australia's manufacturing and in industrial sectors, and our baseline funding, which is doing the heavy lifting on a bunch of other things around the electricity transition and EVs. Mm-hmm. We're an agency that's going from strength to strength. We've been very well supported by this government, and we think we can continue to deliver with this program and whatever else is provided to us over time. We're very excited at where things are at.
Just a few things on your plate, Darren Miller.
It's all good.
Well, we're very excited to watch how this unfolds, and I think it's a great announcement. So congratulations and all the best. And I hope to talk to you very soon about where it heads.
Thanks to you and for the opportunity to have a chat. It's been really great.
And that was Darren Miller, the CEO of the Australian Renewable Energy Agency. Sophie, look, it's interesting. We spent the last 20 years lamenting the fact that we sort of trained most of the very clever solar engineers in the last in the world, and they've all gone back home and created their own manufacturing giants. Mm. It's past time, it seems, that Australia can try and add value to, look, its great resource and its great know-how. We struggled to do this with our minerals. Maybe we can do this with our intellectual capacity.
That's right. And I think the really interesting message is that it's, you know, it's not necessarily a competition. It's not a contest with China. It's not about being cheaper or better. Actually, we could end up collaborating really closely with China in setting up an industry here, because it's going to be for everyone's benefit in the long run. And I think that's a really interesting message. It's not so much about picking economic winners as it is about building sovereignty, you know, and energy security in the end.
Mm. I'm kind of intrigued about SunDrive, though. This is the solar panel innovators, or yeah. solar module innovators, backed by Mike Cannon-Brookes and I think Malcolm Turnbull and others. What more do we know about them? I mean, they were obviously they were there at the launch at Liddell. They've signed an MOU with AGL, but how much do we know about their technology and how far advanced and how competitive it is? Because their whole idea, I think, works largely based around the replacement of silver, which is an expensive part of the supply chain with copper.
Yeah.
Do we know much about them and what they've done in the last little while?
Well, so they're at the stage where they are, you know, they're wanting to build a commercial scale facility, and they claim to have achieved some quite, well, I think they say world-leading efficiencies in the conversion rate for their copper-based solar cells. So this is something that we are trying to champion, in that, you know, this is what it's all about. It's about improving the technology. It's about trying to do it here. It's going to be probably a bit similar to Tindo for now, in that a lot of the components will still come from China, and it'll be more about assembling it all here and using their technology. But I don't know how much we know about how their technology stands up in the real world.
Hmm.
But remains to be seen, I guess.
Look, it does remain to be seen. I mean, I am reminded of Sliver, which is the Australian solar innovator that was sort of bought out by Origin more than a decade ago. And the principle of that was actually to use less silicon, because silicon was the most costly component of the solar supply chain then. But then the price of silicon collapsed and it became a non-issue, and Sliver couldn't compete another one. So look, I really hope that SunDrive doesn't go down the same way, but I guess it's one of the things that we have to see. Look, that was a great interview with Darren Miller. Look, let's quickly just wrap up with some of the other news. We've just got the data out for the month of March. Sophie, what does it tell us?
Well, it tells us that we're still warming up in 2024. We're just kind of doing some hamstring stretches and that kind of thing.
I should point out that this is actually for rooftop solar installations. I forgot to preface that before.
Yes, no, we're sort of tracking as we were last year, a tiny, tiny bit ahead. But yeah, I think it's a notoriously quiet time over Easter for the industry. So we should be heading into some good growth. But at the moment, I think New South Wales is sort of setting the pace, which is good. They had a bit of a jump month on month compared to Victoria and Queensland, which didn't jump. Let's put it that way.
No, well, that's right. Yeah, and look, and it's quite interesting because New South Wales, of course, is the grid with the most amount of coal, and it's interesting that sort of their consumers are the ones that are going with the most amount of rooftop solar at the moment. So
It's been leading the pack for a while now. It's quite interesting, and especially in commercial, I think, which is great.
Well, it probably should. I mean, given it is the biggest economy, it's got the biggest population, so by all rights, it should. But Queensland had taken the lead much earlier. The other thing that we saw was figures from the Clean Energy Regulator. Look, these are sort of trailing data, and it really just sort of talks to the year to the end of 2023. But it does reinforce that point, which we probably knew, that rooftop solar really is the strongest part of the whole sort of energy transition. I think about 5.5 gigawatts were added in 2023 of renewable energy. 3.2 of that came from rooftop solar, so that's 60% of the new additions came from households and businesses. Sort of,
quite phenomenal.
Well, it is quite phenomenal. We keep on forgetting that, and when we think about sort of public support for this transition and things like that, these are actually really important. But I guess if we're going to meet that 82% renewable target, we're going to have to ramp up the large scale stuff. But look, the rooftop solar increases dramatically, but that also has all sorts of impacts and opportunities, I guess, in the way that we kind of structure the grid, the way that we manage rooftop solar, the way we pair it with battery storage, the way that we frame rules around inverters, and the management of the grid, and the whole idea about it sort of a distributed grid rather than a centralized grid and things like that. So it is an interesting one to see how that one unfolds. I'm just wondering whether there's any other bits of news we need to sort of touch on before sort of wrapping up for this episode.
Well, I thought that nice story out of Germany that they've simplified the rules for solar balconies. I thought that was really interesting on one step. I just really feel like it goes to show that there's just so much more room to move in this market, in this industry, and people are thinking all the time of how we can maximize this, and in particularly in solar. And it just, to me, exemplifies, that we're just onward and upward, and yes, let's back our industry to make some panels. God damn it!
I was actually quite fascinated by that. I was actually quite fascinated by that story, because the idea of sort of solar balconies, some people hang out their washing over the balcony, and Germans seem to sort of hang out their solar panels over the balcony too. And not just a few. There's 300,000 last year alone, actually installed. Well, balcony solar, and they've just sort of improved the rules. So instead of sort of a 20 question form that you've got to fill out, you now just have 4 or 5 questions, which I guess is, do you have an apartment? Yeah. Do you have a balcony? Do you have a plug?
Yeah, basically. It's they're better phrased questions, I think.
Oh, good.
But it's quite astonishing, the huge demand that people have to want to, to just make their own power. So I think that's a great little story.
It is, and it's a nice way to end this episode of the Solar Insiders podcast. Look, thanks, Sophie, for your great interview with Darren Miller, the CEO of the Australian Renewable Energy Agency. Look, I think the Sunshot program is going to be quite fascinating. This sort of issue of sovereignty and the ability of Australia to sort of create a new manufacturing industry, I think it's going to be really important. Thanks to our sponsor, Pylon Energy, and we'll be back again in a fortnight with another episode of the Solar Insiders podcast. Bye for now.
Solar Insiders was brought to you by Pylon. Pylon provides easy-to-use solar design software for installers and retailers with pay-as-you-go pricing, no monthly costs, and no lock-in contracts. Join Australia's top solar companies who trust Pylon to design high-resolution, CEC-ready solar proposals. Solar Insiders is also brought to you by Nextracker, delivering some of the highest performing solar assets in the country. Like a sunflower follows the sun, Nextracker's market-leading solar solutions deliver optimal return on investment for utility solar farms in Australia. Check out their flagship NX Horizon Smart Solar Tracker, their intelligent optimization software, and the industry's most advanced terrain-following solar tracking technology, NX Horizon XTR.